Hey, welcome back to Radio Statler. I'm your host, Johnny Christmas, here with Chelsea Manningham.
Hey.
She's been so kind to give us a few minutes of her time after spending 2 hours being interviewed.
Yeah, I'm a little sore.
Yeah, now coming down here to deal with us beating up a little more. But we're super friendly down here. This is more like our chill space. You could tell it's a homemade radio station that we've been doing here.
Hey, looks like my bedroom, so.
All right.
It's efficient.
It works. Bedroom's awesome.
I know, right?
I can dig it. Is this your first Hope, like actually attending? Or no?
Yeah, this is my first time to attend Hope. I was going to attend in 2010, but I got a little busy.
Yeah, kind of got backed up, a little jammed up.
Yeah.
I saw you downstairs last night during the wee hours, hanging out maybe towards the escalator mezzanine. Were you just coming back in, or
I was coming back in. I was actually at a party, and I was staying at the hotel. So Pennsylvania Hotel the Hotel Pennsylvania is very aesthetic.
Yes,
and
it's very posh.
I have a very basic room upstairs, so I figured like I would come down and see if anybody was down here at 1 a.m. But that's what happens when you've had two drinks. Is you think, oh yeah, I'll just go over here, and there's nobody there.
Yeah, it's an odd crew down here at 2 a.m. It's us. There's probably 20 of us. We're the weirdos who are up. Many of us were here till like 7 a.m.
Yeah.
Doing our weird.
Whoops.
I think that's where I've had some of my best times at Hope, was in this mezzanine. I love that it's 24 hours.
Yeah.
I just thought it was cool seeing you, and I was like, oh, Chelsea's up hanging out.
Yeah, I was hoping to see other people. And.
Right. It's a bit sparse.
Yeah, because like I work at 1, I work at 1 a.m. all the time.
Right. Yeah. That's what we do.
Yeah.
Cool. How's your experience been? Have you been able to mingle while there's more people here during the day?
Yeah. So I mean, this is a very friendly environment. I do this stuff regularly. In fact, I always feel awkward because I like already know most of the people here. So,
right.
You know, like,
right.
these are people from like the actual hacker community, not the like corporate ones. So,
yep.
There's not even that many feds here this year.
That we know of.
I haven't seen any. I'm pretty good at finding them.
Yeah, my scorecard's super low. You probably got a better eye than I do.
Yeah, one of them was wearing an actual FBI shirt, so I was like, yep, that's... it's that guy.
They stopped trying to hide it.
Does your luggage get lost at the airport? Oh my god, is this one? Oh, that's cool. So you're not being generally harassed or treated poorly.
Oh, no. I mean, I've just been hanging out by the hardware hacking area, playing with Raspberry Pis, and... like, yeah, they've got Arduinos there, but I brought my own Raspberry Pis.
That's awesome. I really like that. We have some of the keynote speakers, they'll turn up and then disappear immediately after the talk. Some of them will need a security detail.
I'm here because this is what I do.
Right, yeah. And I think, like, I was just telling Joe here, like, I put you in, like, my top three favorite keynote speakers that I've heard here at Hope.
Aw,
and I think verbatim what I said was, if you took all of the aspects of what make Hope its unique con, you know, the fact that, like, it's sort of a hacker con, but it's also very socio-political, it's semi-anarchist, it has hacktivist leanings. Like, if you could take all these aspects of Hope and build them into a human being, like, I feel like after watching your keynote, Chelsea is what would come out of that.
Yeah, it's the real hacker conference.
Yeah, like, this is really where we came from, and I love that it hasn't changed in the 20 years I've been going, at least.
Yeah, but that's also been a tough fight to like keep the culture of the more corporate aspects of the tech field, and you know a lot of people want to go to Las Vegas, so you know they don't want to go to a denky run-down hotel in the middle right next to Penn Station. So that keeps a lot of people away.
And everyone seems happy about it. I'm happy with that. Like I love that. I love that the senior leadership here.
# aesthetic.
Yeah, it is that aesthetic. Yeah. You know, it reminds me of like an old goth club we used to have in Chicago called Neo. Got torn down, and they tried to stand it up somewhere else, but the interior was completely different. And even the same bartenders, the same DJs, and it didn't work. It's the aesthetic, really, like, this, especially this mezzanine floor is what makes
it. I have an old CRT tube television in my room.
Oh, you still have one of the pre-renovated... How does our keynote speaker not at least have one of the renovated rooms at the Hotel Pennsylvania? Who's from... Darko... I had one of those last time. It was incredible. It's a relic now. You'd like turn it on and you...
I'm not even turning it on. I'm just like observing it because like I have my own monitors and I have my own screens. Like I watch everything on my iPad. So I'm just like,
right.
Who watches a TV anymore?
Yeah, it's just decoration. And now like it's getting to be like kitschy decoration, like old 60s art deco. It's like, oh, look at these cool chairs that aren't meant to sit in.
Yeah,
look
but
at this TV you shouldn't watch.
It's more real than say like, I mean, I love the Ace Hotel. I mean, I stay there pretty frequently, but it's like not, it's like, this is real. This is like real, like that's a like created aesthetic. But
right.
Like this is like a genuine, like, oh no, this is just how it's been for the last 30 years.
This is something created by people being here for a long time.
Yeah.
You seriously are our hope. That's amazing. Like,
aw, thanks.
Just like down to your like thorough appreciation of the crappy room.
Yes.
Like, this is fantastic. I'm so glad you're here.
Definitely.
And I'm so glad you're having a good time. And
yeah, fantastic time.
What
this has been a blast, actually. You know, like,
how long have you been here?
I got here Thursday night. And it was actually a rough day for me. So I was actually very busy, and I actually missed a train. So I was just like, crap. Like, but actually, you know, the train change was not as bad as I thought it would be. So. But yeah.
Cool. And you're here now.
I'm here now, great. But I didn't come in until late, and I just slept until the next morning, like 11 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, oh God, I missed so much already.
I know that goes.
Yeah.
It's fine. We all do. That's why we're up till 7 down here.
Yeah.
That's cool. So it's keeping in good spirits.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely.
Stress free.
You know, like I said, like my friends are here. Like, and honestly, like, I'm not here because I wanted to be the keynote speaker or because I wanted to get the free stuff. I'm here because my friends are here, and it's a good excuse for us to like come together from San Francisco and from Berlin and from, you know, all across the country and across the world to like be in the same spot. And, you know, it's a pity it only happens twice, you know, like once every 2 years, but it's definitely, and plus, you know, like Hope. Like, the people at Hope have been sending me letters and cards every year, or, like, every 2 years. Like, in 2012, I got a crap ton of cards and letters. In 2014, I got even more, and in 2016, I got the most.
I loved that you acknowledged that.
And now I can just, like, be here and, like, have people show up. They don't have to write letters anymore or use those postcards.
But then what are we going to do with all those? You were the last person we had to physically write letters to.
I mean... email people? Text message?
It's so informal.
Letters were informal at one time.
That's true. I still get spam in my mailbox, I guess.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a few fun questions. Just like lighten the mood from the keynote got pretty heavy at times. You get a lot of conspiracy theories that surround you just by being a public figure. One of my favorite ones personally was when you first really started tweeting, at least on your Chelsea Manning Twitter account. You use a lot of emojis.
Oh, yeah, and definitely.
Yeah, you're like...
And I've been doing that. Like, that was prior to all this. Like, I've been using emoji, or at least emoticons before emoji were a thing, since the, like, late 90s. So, I got
like
my emoji game down a long time
ago. Yeah, like, hackers, we've been using emoticons for, I'd say we've invented a lot of them, but that's...
I mean, it was back whenever it was, like, you had to, like, actually be good at ASCII art.
Right, yeah, because there wasn't emoji. It was Alt 254. It was horrible.
Yeah.
So, like, when you first started getting public notoriety and tweeting with all your emojis, it was right around when, like, the emoji movie had come out. And there was this great conspiracy theory that you were actually being paid by the emoji movie to market for them by just simply using tons of emojis. And I thought that was hilarious. Like, there's no way that that's actually going on.
No comment. I can neither confirm nor deny.
There's somebody sitting in their basement right now. But
Yeah, editing your Wikipedia page again.
Yeah. Definitely, like, yeah. Like, that was... I saw that, too. It's not the craziest conspiracy theory I've seen, but...
So my follow-up
definitely
was,
one of the funds.
What's your favorite, maybe not craziest, but personal favorite, like, conspiracy theory? You're like, that's great. That's hilarious. I like that.
Gosh, now you're really getting, like,
I know that's something you probably would have to think long and hard about.
Yeah, I would have to think long and hard about it. I just, you know, some of them are more, honestly, some of the conspiracy theories that I see are artful. They're like, it's like there's a lot of dots that they connect that are real dots, but they don't connect that way. And I just, it fascinates me because I'm like, that was creative. I got to give you props for that.
You're just impressed by the amount of effort they put into connecting.
And research, and any sufficient system in which you have a lot of nodes, you're going to be able to connect those nodes into a believable and tangible thing. And there's some creativity with that. So I appreciate these things for their artful value. You're going to encounter this, like you said, like with any public figure. Being a CIA psyop is one of my favorites, I think, because they don't like me much.
Right. That's seem to be at odds a bit.
Yeah.
In personal philosophy.
Also, it's kind of not their thing to operate domestically anymore. So.
Right. That's great.
Yeah.
I'm sure you see a lot of that turn up on the Wikipedia page. I like that you mentioned that you watch your Wikipedia page a lot and just don't say anything and just let it go.
Yeah.
Like, what were some of the most incisive things that you've read in your Wikipedia page where you almost said something?
Honestly, it's like little things about my early life where I'm just like, that sounds really transphobic. You know, that sounds like I've had moments where I feel like people who look at my past and look at the things I've done, take away my political agency and my ability to think for myself. And like I'm some hapless person who's just falling, I don't know what I'm doing, and therefore I'm falling,
down to the stairs into the position you're currently in.
Yeah. And I'm I can make mistakes. I can learn things. I can do things, I can make my own decisions, including bad ones and including good ones and including, mediocre ones. And I don't like the tone sometimes of me as this hapless transgender person who's just dealing with so much that she can't handle it.
Yeah, some poor kid thrust into the spotlight.
Yeah.
let me ask you something that has been something that I had talked to a lot of my friends who are hackers and also have done military service. Military service to the hacktivist, to the hacker, to the social justice warrior.
Yeah.
It's such a divisive issue. There's somewhere who's and I've heard many great excuses for why they chose to join. What caused you to make that decision to say this is the right thing I need to be doing?
Yeah. I was 19, the war in Iraq was going on. I didn't, I hadn't really formed strong political opinions yet. I just was like, they'll give me money for college and I'll be helping. And I just I was very naive at the time.
Almost the usual.
Yeah. I was I was in 19, I was working at Starbucks and I just couldn't afford to continue going to college. And I wanted to get my degree. So I felt like that was an opportunity to do that. Also, being a trans person and dealing with repression of that, kind of drove me to do this macho thing. What'll make me a real man is if I join the military, and be in the army or be in the Marine Corps, And I think, and it's funny because I actually actively sought out a job that at the time didn't involve computers or technology because I was this is my hobby. This is what I do all the time.
Sure.
But then as soon as 2008 rolls around, they're like, here's a computer. And I'm like, oh, no. Uh-oh. Darn it.
They found me out.
Yeah.
Here we go again.
So, I wasn't trying to do IT stuff or.
Sure. What were you trying to do? What was your secondary?
I thought I was going to learn about geopolitics. I thought I was going to learn a lot about how the world works behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. and I was, you know, I was disappointed in that. You know, it was, turns out that, you know, just the all these things are just administrative machines that bungle their way through, you know, making a decision-making process and like continue on nothing more than the inertia, on like their administrative inertia,
yeah,
continuing to do something. Why are we doing this? Because we were told to, kind of thing.
Right.
Or because we've always been doing this.
I think that's my favorite aspect of the conspiracy theorists, is the amount of credit they give to a lot of these agencies and authorities. And it's like, no, there's not that much thought going into that.
Yeah,
no.
And I just had a conversation about this like last night. Somebody mentioned the backdoor, like the allegations that, you know, the NSA put backdoors, mm-hmm, into some bits of cryptography. And I question the intent of that. Like, I don't think that was 100% intentional. I think that was accidental.
Yeah.
It was just somebody didn't know that the software, like, had, like, they were making, did have a vulnerability. But then in other instances where it's documented that they did try to do these things, it's much more subtle, and it's much more, like, intentional, and it's much harder to find. So, you know, it's a tough call, because, like, you know, sometimes they do get it right, but whenever they do get it right, it's usually because somebody like really thought about this and like did a lot of work. But also, whenever it comes to government stuff, like everything that the government does, and, you know, is viewed through this lens of legality, and it doesn't mean that it's not what we think of as legal or illegal. It's whatever they can, what they think they can get away with from their legal department. So consulting with lawyers a lot is like, mm-hmm, what is the real giveaway of like an actual government conspiracy is whether or not it fits within the legal framework that the U.S. government like interprets. So if they interpret this legal framework and it fits that legal framework, and I'm thinking of like 12333, I'm thinking of like the FISA, you know, like,
right,
provisions, like if it fits within that legal framework, then it's probably definitely a real thing.
Right, because they still operate within the bounds of what they've set up.
Yeah.
Because if they escape those bounds, probably, A, it, yeah, draws a lot of attention to what's going on, and that's the exact opposite response that they want.
Yeah.
Like, that makes a lot of,
yeah,
sense. But also, like, when you're trying to identify these things, it's a lot of subtle, like, unspoken.
You have to read a lot of, like, executive orders. And
read into them.
And like, read into, like,
lines.
And also, like, updates to laws. Like, there's always these bills with, like, these, like, omnibus, like, bills that have, like, these intelligence writers and things, like, you,
yeah,
know, and provisions for, like, the Department of Defense and, you know, like, all these different, like, actual government conspiracies, like, you know, they're kind of open secrets in a very, like, convoluted way, because so few people actually look at this stuff.
Sure, yeah, they're buried, right, you know.
But that's where I start. Like, I just start doing FOIA requests. If I want to find something going on, I usually go with a FOIA request, mm-hmm, or I will look up a statute or a regulation and, like, go through, and I'll look at their process, and I'm like, oh, okay, like, if this process were led to its conclusion, this would be happening, and in fact, that is the case. This is, in fact, happening. So that's how I usually find, you know, and Jason Leopold is fantastic at this. He's so much better at this than me.
Yeah.
And,
he's
like,
famously great at it.
Yeah. So, like, yeah, you know, like, the government has literally called him in an official paper, like, the FOIA terrorist. So that says a lot about him.
That should be the top of his resume.
Yeah.
Jason Leopold, FOIA terrorist.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. Well, Chelsea, I'll let you get back to Hope and get back to your friends, because,
yeah,
that's why you're here.
Hardware hacking. That's,
yeah,
my new thing.
Awesome. Yeah, clearly.
I've got tons of Raspberry Pis.
I am so excited by your excitement.
Yeah.
You just exude this. It's fantastic.
Thanks.
I'm
excited to be,
yeah,
here.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
You can all tell. Thank you so much. Enjoy your time. This has been Johnny Christmas interviewing Chelsea Manning on Radio Statler, and we now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.